We're back to the Neil Haley Show here on the Total Celebrity segment, sponsored by the Dr. Christopher Hall Show. And I'm excited to welcome, you know, when I think about childhood favorites, I am a huge Denver Bronco fan and Steeler fan, but Broncos are my team. I would wear my Denver Bronco jacket in high school and everyone would go out on me about losing the Super Bowls, which my guess, you know, that's, we don't want to talk about that as much, but just constantly, but I bled orange and blue. And this guest is huge. I'm excited to welcome the program. Legendary Denver Bronco, Carl Mecklenburg. Carl, thanks for stopping by. How are you?
I'm good, Neil.
So can you imagine the ribs I got in Pittsburgh? You know, the Steelers weren't very good at that time. And I had my Denver Bronco jacket, wearing it to high school every day and hearing things from them. And then it would be great till the Super Bowl happened. So I at least said, hey, there's two teams. And this was the days when the Steelers weren't even going to the playoffs, you know, when you were on your big run for Super Bowls. And sure, I heard it, that's for sure. But I stayed loyal.
Yeah, those were challenging years. If you just can't quite get over the hump, the franchise obviously got over the hump and repeatedly. And I'd like to think that those Super Bowl losses set up the opportunity for Super Bowl wins.
I believe it did. And I believe it gave Elway that incentive to want to do it and keep going. And so he did. Let's talk about, where did you grow up, Carl? Tell us where you
grew up. I grew up in Minneapolis. I was born in Seattle. My dad was in the Army. I was born in Fort Lewis there, but spent my whole childhood and through high school all in Minneapolis.
Okay, all Minneapolis. So tell me your family life. Like, what were you? How many did you have, brothers and sisters? Kind of about.
Sure. That? Yeah, I have an older sister. I am pretty sure one of the reasons I was a professional football player is the beating she would give me. I had to prove my manhood, so that was it. And then as soon as I got bigger than her, she became a psychologist, so she could still beat me up. So that's. She was a big part of it. And actually, she was a great athlete, too. Very, very good swimmer, very good athlete, a softball player, and two younger brothers. My parents were very involved. One of the things that I think really allowed me to succeed as a football player is just their acceptance of it. My dad's a kind, gentle guy. He's actually an obstetrician gynecologist. And instead of sending me to the shrink when I wanted to hit guys, he said, get out there on the football field and hit them. So that was pretty cool. And my mom, you know, took care of all the dirty laundry, and I just driving me back and forth to practices and games and stuff. So the family was definitely involved.
How much did you know you were going that you're going to be a, did you always want to be a professional football player? Is that something you wanted to do?
You know, not really, Neil. I was actually, growing up in Minnesota, hockey was the sport. I was the goalie on our hockey team and a very good one. Interestingly enough, though, I think those experiences as a goalie helped me to be a much better linebacker. The position of goalie is all about angles. It's about making sure you got the right angles and reacting very quickly, being decisive. And those are the two things I brought with me to the NFL that when they switched me to linebacker, all of a sudden I was capable of it.
When in college, when did you not know that you can be in the NHL? That's interesting. You talk about being a goalie. Did you think your goal was to play in the NHL? When did you know that was not going to be it?
Yeah, you know, we moved to a different city where there was already goalies and they didn't need a goalie. So I was out early on. We moved to Edina, which is a suburb of Minneapolis, and great hockey city, unbelievable kind of system. So you came up through the system, and if you weren't part of that system, you really didn't fit in. Actually, I played JV football as a junior in high school. I didn't make the varsity team as a junior in high school. As a senior in high school, I was 6 feet tall and 200 pounds, not big enough to play major college football. But I was a good, I was a tight end, a defensive end on our high school football team, was all state at both positions, but wasn't big enough to play major college football. So I went to Augustana College in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, a little Division II school on a 1/3 scholarship, which I played for 2 years there, and they took it away. I remember the day I had led the team in sacks. I grew 3 inches and 40 pounds my first year at college.
Oh, wow.
Things changed. I got good. My second year there, I led the team in sacks. I played every down on defense. I'm thinking they're going to give me the full scholarship like we talked about in my family's living room. I'm sitting down in the coach's office, and first thing out of his mouth was, "Carl, we know your dad's a doctor. He can afford this school. We're going to take away your scholarship, use it to bring someone else in." So I left Augustana. I walked on at the University of Minnesota. I was ineligible for a year, earned a scholarship, and as a junior at University of Minnesota, I led the Big Ten in sacks, tied with Andre Tippett. I was playing defensive tackle. As a senior at Minnesota, we were so bad, nobody had to throw the ball against us, so I didn't get to rush the passer. But I did lead the team in tackles as a defensive tackle, and that's pretty unusual.
So this is a kind of a really a Rudy type story in a way. Underdog,
overcoming
things.
Yeah, a lot of overcoming, and overcoming obstacles is the key to success for me. You gotta be able to overcome obstacles. That when I got to the NFL and saw guys coming into training camp who'd always been the best players on their team, you'd be amazed how many times those guys washed out. Because you're not going to be the best player on your team when you get to an NFL team as a rookie. Someone's going to whip up on you, and you better know how to bounce back from that. I mean, for me, it was here we go again. Right? It was not a surprise that I got knocked down, but I picked myself up, figured out how to fix that mistake, that challenge, and fought through it.
I cannot believe you're telling me that. That's such an amazing thing to think about, specifically that you played Division II, didn't get a full ride, literally grew, because if you were 6'3", you would have been the right numbers, right, to get recruited by a Division I school. It's always about size in certain aspects. Go through it, do really well. They tell you no, and you walk on. So talk about walking on, the story of walking on a team, how that feels, like how you're like, this is kind of like where you're ready for your number to be called if it's even going to happen, the walk-on process. You have to go
out. At that time, Neil, when you transfer between four-year colleges, you are ineligible to play in games. So you got to sit out for a year. So I was a red shirt for that first year. I got there amazingly at the University of Minnesota at the time. Mike Shanahan was the offensive coordinator.
Oh, wow. I didn't.
Mike Martz worked in the film room. Tony Dungy was a graduate assistant, and Tony was actually in charge of the walk-ons of the Beaver team, basically the practice guys. So I worked with Tony for that whole year. My job was to be a live blocking dummy. I'm supposed to imitate the guy from Iowa or Michigan State or whoever we're playing that week. If I want to eat with a team, I've got to sweep up the weight room or sweep up the locker room. That was part of my job. I was going to be the best football player that ever played the game. That was my desire. That was my passion. I was pushing and pushing and pushing every single day. When I made a decision, it was tied to that. And I really feel like if you understand where you're going, if you have that target, and you make decisions that are steps towards that target, you've got a chance to accomplish great things. For me, making the team was the first step, and moving on from there to the NFL. I mean, I was the 310th pick of the draft, Neil. No one expected me to make it in the NFL.
So there's the same story and everything. It's basically a story of overcoming adversity, meaning the challenges. Think about you're there, you're the tackling dummy, yet then you end up becoming one of the best in the Big Ten. I mean, how does that happen? Is it a lot, even with work ethic and stuff like that? It was interesting. I talked to Anthony Griggs, and how Anthony Griggs' story ended up playing in the NFL. He's from Pittsburgh, and I'm friends with him. And literally he told me the story, you know, that it's the process, that it's kind of a story like yours, where literally he was, and I didn't think he could play at a Division I school. And the work, was it your work ethic, the time that you spent outside, that made you better than everybody else? Because they were expected to be the better one? What would you say?
Yeah, I think so. I think you'd, the best way I could describe it is a sports mentality. A sports mentality means you are honest and forgiving with yourself. You look at what happened that day. You evaluate what went on. You fix what went wrong. You repeat what went right. And you take a step forward. In the NFL, they film everything. They film every game. They film every practice. Under Mike Shanahan, they even film meetings. So theoretically, you can sit in a meeting watching film of yourself, practicing, right? Oh, everything's wow. on film. Everything's evaluated. And if you grade out 90%, you're an all pro. You're the best of the best. So they evaluate each play on technique and on assignment. So you're making mistakes, right? That's reality. You make mistakes, you do the wrong thing. So the question is, how do you react to that? Are you honest with yourself? Do you blame other people? You say, oh, that coach didn't tell me, or defensive end should have done this, or the
exactly.
should or do you say, okay, I can fix that. How do I set some goals? How do I fix that this week? And next week I won't make that mistake. I'll probably make other mistakes. I know I will, but then I got to work on those and fix those. So that sports mentality, I think, is really what allowed me to continue to grow and get better and better and better in football. I think the other thing was I'm very decisive.
Right.
I found out early on in my NFL career that if I took the first step in the right direction before anybody else did, all the angles would change in my favor. Right. The tight end couldn't pin me in. The guard couldn't cut me off. The fullback couldn't keep me from getting to the line. Everything changed. And that's not just true in football. That's true in relationships. That's true in business. That's a fact. If you're prepared, you go into a situation understanding what may happen, having already thought about it. And then when those opportunities arise, you react properly and you take that chance and be decisive. Everything changes. So for me, those were the two things, I guess, more than anything. And I add a third thing. I was a teammate. I would do whatever we could to win, you know, whether it was sweeping the locker room or whether it was, you know, playing special teams or making the switch when they switched me from defensive end to linebacker, you know, and whatever would help the team. So for me, that I think allowed that reputation and that approach to it allowed me to have a long career.
So preparation. So I'm seeing that it sounds like, even though you're so humble, your preparation got you to the level, your study of film, understanding things, and not getting upset when you made mistakes led you to become a really successful linebacker. And then when finally you got to the NFL, so the NFL, you said you were undrafted, right? Or was that what you said?
I was the 310th pick there. I was a 12th round draft choice, 20 guys away from Mr. Irrelevant.
Okay.
I would have been better off financially if I'd have been a free agent, truthfully, because the Broncos owned my rights and I got the base salary. I mean, that was it. So I went in, I was drafted as a nose guard, ended up tearing a ligament in my elbow during training camp. And you can't play nose guard if you can't lock both arms out. So they moved me to defensive end. I played defensive end for 2 years, special teams, and coaches came to me before my third year and said, "Carl, we got a need at linebacker, and we've watched you play. We think you can play linebacker. Never done it in my life. It's a very different job, but if the team needed me to do that, I was going to do that." Switched to linebacker. Didn't even start until the 10th game of that year. Made the Pro Bowl as an All-Pro linebacker that year. I was a linebacker, and no coach had ever seen that in me, but that to me was an amazing example of what a coach should do. A coach should connect with his players, understand what they're capable of, and put them in situations to be successful. To me, you use the strengths of the individual to cover for the weaknesses of the team. Use the strengths of the team to cover for the weaknesses of the individual, and away you go. And Joe Collier, Merle Moore, Stan Jones, that defensive staff were vital in my success in the NFL and in many players' success in the NFL. They would put players in situations and try things that no other coaches would try. I'd have been the average guy in the NFL. I'd have been 3 years and out. If they'd have left me at defensive tackle or nose guard, I wasn't big enough to play those positions every down. Now I could play those positions, but I couldn't take a full season of pounding at those positions.
So linebacker, what made you a better linebacker than the other positions you played in football? Getting in.
Well, I think having the opportunity to play linebacker, especially inside linebacker, was such a blessing because I could control things from where I was at. I understood the blocking patterns. I played defensive tackle before, so I'm lined up on the guard. So I understood the blocking patterns, but now I was free to the ball more often than not. We got defensive linemen eating up the blockers. I can take the angles that I learned as a goalie and make the play, at the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage. It was just the right spot for me. That decisiveness piece is huge at linebacker. If you can take the first step, you got it licked at linebacker. I run a 4.940. I'm not fast enough to play in the NFL, but that first step is the difference. If I had to run 40 yards, we were in big trouble anyway. Right? But that first step allowed me to make all kinds of plays.
And what would you say having the right coaches around you with the Broncos for your success of being 6-time Pro Bowler, right? Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. Huge. I mean, it got to the point under Joe Collier that they were putting me where they thought the ball was going to go at the point of attack. So I played all 7 defensive front positions. There were games. I played all 7 in one game. They'd move me where they thought the ball was going to be. They'd move me when they thought there was a mismatch with an offensive lineman. If they had a tendency to run to the right side all the time, I'd be on the right side. If they had a tendency to run to the strong side all the time, I'd be on the strong side. And there's no place you'd rather be as a defensive player than at the point of attack. So, my versatility and their ability and their vision of saying, you know what, we can make it really challenging for the offenses to prepare for us by moving somebody around. I mean, you look at what happens now when there's an obvious offensive passing situation. Mm-hmm. So then the defense substitutes a bunch of guys and that makes the offense know exactly what kind of defense they're going to be in, right? So, because they're substituting. Now, I could play outside linebacker. I could play inside linebacker. I could be the defensive end in a pass rush. And I was in our nickel defense my whole career. I was a right defensive end. So they didn't know what defense we were going to be in ultimately. So they couldn't judge what play to call based on what defense we were in because of the foresight of Joe Collier and that defensive team and their ability to say, let's try this. Let's see how this works. Obviously I was a beneficiary of that.
Exactly. And your teammates, I'm sure you have a lot of good friends that you develop being a Bronco, right?
Sure do. Lots of guys that went through it with me. Dennis Smith, our strong safety at the time, great player, a guy that, Joe trusted to cover slot receivers, man to man. I mean, an unbelievable athlete. A guy that was in charge of the back 4. I was in charge of the front 7. And a great man, a guy that I'm still got a great relationship with. Jim Ryan, Greg Craig, and Simon Fletcher. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Guys that I'm close to, guys that allowed me to play the way I was able to play. I mean, one of the challenges with moving a player around is that everybody has to know 2 positions. I mean, we had to have a smart team with guys that were able to make those adjustments and move around based on what Joe was trying to do with me. So a bunch of bright guys that love the game of football and won a bunch of games.
That's tremendous. How was it watching John Elway play? I know you're on the sidelines when you're seeing John.
Sure. What, yeah.
I mean,
yeah, John was amazing. John, I mean, Dan Reeves was our coach for 9 of the 12 years I played. And Dan was an old, 3 yards in a cloud of dust kind of guy. If Tom Landry didn't do it, we didn't do it.
Right.
And so he had some shackles on John until it was 2 minutes, right? 2 minutes, John's calling the plays on the field. it was away we go. As a defensive player, you can take chances that other teams couldn't take, even if you got behind a little bit, if it was close at the end of the game, we were going to win that game.
Exactly.
I know it was unbelievable that way. And obviously the whole offense had to, you know, buy in and be a part of that. But John was tremendous, especially in the 2-minute drill, especially when he's scrambling around. Was a great player and a great teammate in many ways.
Absolutely. All right. So let's talk about your greatest moments with the Denver Broncos. What would you say they were?
Well, since you're a Pittsburgh fan, I had a 4-sack game against Pittsburgh. Actually, this defensive player of the week in the NFL for that game against Pittsburgh.
Who's the quarterback? Who was the quarterback at Pittsburgh? Would you remember?
I don't remember. Let's see. It's December 1st, 1985.
Was it in Denver or was it in Pittsburgh where you were?
It was in Pittsburgh. Yeah.
The 85. I'm going to think it could have been Cliff Stout, maybe.
Yeah, it could have been. Yeah, he wasn't Bobby very Brister, mobile.
Or Bubby Brister.
Yeah, it may have been Bubby. I don't know. He was the guy holding the ball. I tackled him.
That's it, exactly. So awesome. And the Super Bowls, again, were the biggest adversity. Again, your career just loops. It's just tough, right?
It really was. You know, there were different reasons we lost each one of them. It was challenging. You go into that situation. A lot of what we did defensively for the first two was based on deception.
Right.
We were moving me all around, doing all that stuff. And when you had 1 week to prepare for that, it's one thing. But when you have 2 weeks to prepare for that, apparently they figured us out. we didn't have much success. And we ended up in running defenses when they were passing and pass defenses when they were running. And they had changed their tendencies, especially when we played against the Giants. That was a tremendous coaching job by Bill Parcells, because they were as predictable a team as I'd ever seen in my life. We went into that game knowing what they were going to do on 1st and 10, knowing what they were going to do on 3rd and 5 or more or 5 or less. I mean, it was, you know, 95% tendencies. And we get into that game and Bill Parcells turned it upside down. They got all the way to the Super Bowl doing it one way. And they got in that game and they said, Denver's going to overplay our tendencies and we'll take advantage of that. And they did. Against San Francisco, I got leg whipped in the first quarter, tore cartilage in both my knees, was out for the rest of the game. I don't know that would have made any difference or not if I'd have been in that game, but I'd like to think it would have. First Super Bowl, it was new. It was wide open. We had chances and we didn't, I think in that game, our kicker missed two field goals in the first quarter, actually went into halftime ahead and ended up losing. There stuff went on. It was tough. You do what you can, try to win the games. But if you lose the game, it's amazing to me. I've talked to guys who have won the Super Bowl. Obviously, I've been on the other end of that. And it's amazing to me how quickly it's all about next year. Guys get traded. Guys retire, coaches go to other staffs, the draft happens and it's all about next year. I think that when you win the thing, it's a big letdown. It's like all of a sudden, wait a second, we're the champions. Wait a second. It's all about us. But all of a sudden, no, it's about the next season. And when you lose the thing, you're very happy. It's all about the next season because you're ready to go play. I was fortunate enough to go to the Pro Bowl each of those three Super Bowl years when we lost and had another game. And back then you played it as a game. It wasn't a touch football thing like they do now, right? Yeah. So all of a sudden I was preparing for another game and moved on. It's frustrating. If I look at my career, I know I'd have been a Hall of Fame player if I'd have won one of those Super Bowls. Unfortunately, like I said, it's a team game and you do what you can.
You could be later inducted in the NFL Hall of Fame. That's a good question for you. You know, as that how they have to do later people.
Right. The senior committee.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, hopefully it'll happen before I die. My wife doesn't like giving speeches. That won't be good. you know, truthfully, if you look at my career, I think one of the challenges that the committees have with me as far as Hall of Fame is my statistics don't match up because I played all seven front positions. Nobody's done that before. I don't see anybody doing it again. So my statistics don't look right. If you just look at me as a pass rusher, I had 79 and a half sacks. It was most in Bronco history at one point, but it wasn't Hall of Fame sack numbers. But I was in pass coverage a bunch of times during passing downs. So maybe that doesn't make sense. You know, if you look at my interceptions, if you look at my tackles, they're all skewed a little bit because I didn't play one position right, where I would have billed all those statistics, you know, at that position. I think that's one of the issues. I think the other issue is trying to quantify, you know, what my value was to the team. You know, if you look at the Super Bowl years, 86, 87, 89, in 88 was the only season I missed games. I missed seven games in 1988. We ended up 8-8 that year. Mm-hmm. If you look at the points against average per game, when I played and when I didn't play and when I didn't play, I had a cat. And when I did play, I had a cast on my hand most of the time. If you look at the points per average in those games, it was 9 points more that we gave up when I didn't play than when I did play. That's pretty significant, I think. So, you know, maybe I just need to have the right person cheering me on in front of those guys, but I think I belong and maybe someday that'll happen.
Exactly. All right. Life after football. Were you ready? Were you prepared for that?
I am. That it was time for me. It was time to spend some more time with my family. My body was done. I've had 18 football related surgeries, 10 on my knees. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been through it. And so I was about a half step short on everything that last year. I ended up getting 3 concussions. The difference between, being ahead of the play and behind the play is either you make it or you get hit in the ear hole. I was getting hit in the ear hole that last year. So it was time and I knew it was time and I retired. The owner and the coaches tried to talk me into coming back, but I couldn't play the way I was comfortable with playing at that point. So I retired, went fishing for a while, spent a lot of time with my family. It was good. Now I'm a professional speaker. For the last 16 years, I've been giving keynote speeches, comparing, the knowledge I got out of football with what's going on in the business world, what's going on in people's lives and making a difference that way. And I love it. The pattern of it is so much like football. I prepare depending on, who I'm speaking for. I perform at a high level for a short period of time. I evaluate what went on. I fix whatever was wrong. I repeat whatever was right. And I get ready for the next one. I mean, it's football, except yeah. I don't hurt. Right. So it's perfect.
So what do you see in the professional speaking career gig, how it's changed, you know, with COVID, then after COVID,
oh, yeah.
The way, how did you have to, you know, continue to evolve when everyone is wanting, they want to do what you're doing, be a professional yeah. speaker. That's one of those. If you look at so many people, they want to be a professional speaker. I know you run into it all the time. Hey, how can I be a professional speaker? It's all about brand. Carl Mecklenburg has a brand, NFL, Denver Broncos, and it speaks to people who you speak with and your success. And that is your brand. And things, brand has changed in so many ways.
Yeah, it has. It has. I've been a member of the National Speakers Association for 15 years. It's a group of speakers who gets together and shares information around branding, around how you present yourself from the stage, how you put together a speech that's targeted for the audience you're speaking for. You know, all the intricacies of professional speaking, I've learned so much from those guys. It's amazing. The ability to grow and learn and the ability to be a part of a team has been tremendous. So if there are people out there who are interested in being a professional speaker, like you're talking about, I would start there. And there's in every major city and almost every state in the union, there's state associations, National Speakers Association, state groups. I'm very involved in the Colorado group. Obviously I'm involved in the national group. And it's made a huge difference for my business. That being said, what's taught there over and over and over again is niche yourself real tight. And you know, you choose what industry you're going to work in, and you develop your name recognition within that industry. And then you expand from there to, if you want to have a wider audience. Now I already have name recognition. Right. So I'm kind of going at it a different way. I've already got the name recognition. So how do I narrow that down to, this is a professional who does a great job. And so I kind of go backwards.
And do you see the relevancy of you at where people are football related fans and how that relates, especially the years you've been speaking, because names and brands change throughout? How do you keep Carl Mecklenburg relevant years after years after years to keep your professional speaking career going? Because everyone's coming out of the woodwork with different things and different stories, and your stories are amazing, all these different things, but people change and they might have not seen you play. Right.
So that's for sure. I got to show a highlight video before I speak just to develop that, that relevancy. Truthfully, I have had to switch some stories. You know, I'm talking about, Peyton Manning and Tom Brady now more instead of John Elway and Johnny Unitas in the past, right? So things have obviously changed, but the fact of the matter is the truth is the truth. I talk about teamwork, courage, dedication, desire, honesty and forgiveness, goal setting, universal, unchanging keys to success that applied for grandparents if they wanted to be successful and will apply for your grandchildren if they want to be successful. These are things that don't change and you need to be reminded of. And I remind my audiences of those things from a different angle maybe than they've been thinking about it. I feel like I go into these situations and everyone in the audience can watch a sporting event and say, you know what, that team is playing like a team. That's not what a team is. They're not playing like a team. So they know what a team is, but they don't see that in their own lives. They don't see their family as a team. They don't see their business as a team. They don't see their community as a team. When I walk out of that room after I'm done speaking, I want them to realize they're a part of teams and being a part of a team is a wonderful thing. You're going to be able to accomplish way more than you possibly could outside of a team as part of a team. So how do you tie into that team? And that's what I talk about.
And you do follow up with these organizations you speak with to try to see if they're implementing some of your strategies?
Yeah, of course. It's an interesting business because I've got an hour with them more often than not. I try to spend more time with the groups. I'll come in early and play in their golf event and hang out with them and go to meals with them just so I can get to know them better, so I can speak their language and maybe answer some of their questions from the platform. But the follow-up has got to be there. And the ROI has been there in the past and will continue to be there because I take it seriously. When I get up there and I talk about these things, everybody, you're an adult, right? Everybody I'm speaking to more often than not is an adult. They know these things.
Yeah. But they don't follow them.
These aren't surprises to them, but I've got to remind them of the value there and how it's going to make a difference in their life. So that's my job.
All right, Carl, best place we can find information on you. People want to book you and stuff.
Go to carlmecklenburg.com. You can misspell it a couple of different ways. Hopefully you can put it up on your, go in there, Google that, carlmecklenburg.com. And it'll pop up there. There's video there. Obviously my contact information is there. There's a lot of client feedback there. I'd love to hear from folks.
All right. Thanks again, Carl. Appreciate it. It was great. I could have 1,000 questions with you. Definitely have to have you back on again. And I'd like to talk about more of the speaking thing, because I have an idea for you if you've not thought about it. The way to expand your business, teach other people to speak, because you really, that is becoming a gigantic business. You have the brand name. Never know later when you don't want to travel as much, there's so much more to do. So something to think about.
I appreciate it, Neil.
All right. You're listening. All right. You're welcome. You're listening and watching the Neil Haley Show. And we'll be back in just a moment.